born into the fading remnants of American aristocracy, a direct descendant of John Jacob Astor and Robert Livingston, Alexander Aldrich had a childhood marked by eccentricity and genteel squalor. Growing up at Rokeby, the crumbling two-century-old 43-room family mansion in the Hudson River, she was relegated to former servants' quarters and sometimes didn't know the source of her next meal. Surrounded by a revolving cast of oddball relatives, living amid the bohemian neglect of the once grand estate, Alexandra vied for attention from her pathologically distracted parents and tried to create order out of chaos. She tells the story in her new memoir, The Astor Orphan, where she paints a portrait of her unconventional childhood and also reaches back to the glory days of the Astors. It is a great pleasure to welcome Alexandra Aldrich to the roundtable. Thank you very much for being with us. I appreciate it.
Thank you very much for having me.
It is very nice to have you here. What brought you to tell this story and to tell about your childhood and your growing up?
Well, I grew up at Rokeby in the 70s and early 80s. And when I was growing up, it felt to me as if the family history had stopped in 1963 with the death of my great-grandmother, Margaret Chandler Aldrich, who was one of the so-called Astor orphans, great-grandchildren of William B. Astor. I grew up in what was practically a house museum surrounded by portraits of my ancestors, busts, artifacts from their adventures. And my uncle treated the house as a house museum. He had put it on the National Register for Historic Places in 1975 and would bring historical societies to tour the house. So I would sometimes be introduced to these historical societies as Alexandra, the oldest of the next generation of Rokeby's owners. So that was my title. My identity is the outside world. And the other parts of who I was were not mentioned, that I was the daughter of a Polish artist and of a Harvard-educated handyman. So I wanted to expand on the history, update it, and tell my story.
What was there about your upbringing, and you read about this in the book, about understanding what the family had and then what happened and what you had?
This book is a lot about connecting the past with the present. I incorporate lots of stories about my ancestors in order to help understand the behavior and character traits of the adults in my life and of myself also. And when I was a child, I always believed that the ancestors had been perfect, and I based that on the fact that they looked so beautiful in their portraits and gilt frames, and the fact that we basically lived to preserve their memory. That's how I was raised to think. And as an adult, I came to see that there were a lot more similarities and differences between us and our ancestors, just that they had a lot more money. But there seems to have been a pattern of children being orphaned both physically and emotionally throughout the generations. My father's father was an alcoholic, and so he wasn't present for his children emotionally. His mother, my great-grandmother Margaret, had been very cold and unaffectionate. And she had also been an orphan herself and didn't really know how to parent. Her mother had been raised by grandparents. So there were generations of broken families, and that really that made me feel more human, and that they were more human, and I felt more comfortable about who I was.
When you talk about Rokeby and this 43-room, 450-acre mansion in upstate New York, that even within the house in your growing up, there were different classes, right? I mean, there were people, there were have and have nots.
That's right. I was the poorer cousin. My uncle and his family lived in the back of the house and had a more middle class lifestyle. My uncle had a job, and my father had chosen to be basically the gentleman farmer of the property after going to Harvard and traveling extensively through Eastern Europe and having gone to Johns Hopkins School of Advanced International Studies. He returned to Rokeby at approximately age 30. And because he didn't have money to hire help, he ended up being the handyman, the maintenance man, and doing all the work himself. And because he was also an owner, he didn't get any income for his work. So my parents and I were basically destitute. We lived up on the third floor in a three-room apartment. among the storerooms full of broken furniture and hallways cluttered with boxes of books and miscellaneous odds and ends. And we weren't even allowed to use the antiques because they were really for show down in the grand formal front of the house. So I slept on a metal cot, and we had car seats as recliners in our living room, and we had to borrow money for groceries. And most of the time I had to rely on the largesse of my extended family for extra privileges like violin lessons and clothes. My grandmother, who lived down the hill on the same property, paid for most of those things for me. So I was really in a weak and embarrassing position, being the poor cousin living on the margins of my extended family's lives.
There's very much a theme of abandonment in the book, and you felt that pretty early in your life.
Yes, that's right. I felt physically neglected because my parents were really too poor to take care of my physical needs. And I felt emotionally neglected because the adults in my life were very much living in the past. My father's main way of communicating with me was through stories about his childhood and his grandparents and about the glory days. And everyone seemed to be pretty nostalgic for the past, my uncle and my grandmother as well. And so I didn't feel that they were able to be present to deal with the crises of the family that were going on around me. And I chronicle several very traumatic events that occurred between ages 10 and 14 that really transformed me from a confident child to a fearful and anxious teenager.
And in that difference, in that growing up process, at what point did you learn of your family's history, that there was this time and there was that golden age, and then I assume it becomes to you later that you're not a part of it?
Well, I think I was pretty aware right from the get-go because of our obvious poverty and the contrast between the front of the house with the drawing rooms with two grand pianos and fireplaces with marble mantelpieces and the library with 4,000 leather-bound books from the 18th century and earlier, and the dining room and the home parlor. So the contrast between that and where I lived on the third floor was so obvious. It was obscene, and it was obvious to me from a very young age. So I managed to keep a facade and keep up appearances for a while. I went to a public school called Chancellor Livingston, named after my ancestor. And so people at school, the kids at school, knew I lived in a mansion. They knew that I was descended from the Astors and Livingstons. And so I felt I had a reputation to uphold. So I tried to get straight A's. I played the violin very well, and I thought that I had to be perfect. So I was aware from a very young age that I had to put on a show for the outside world. That outside world didn't really come into Rokeby. I didn't invite kids home because it was too complicated to explain why I lived the way I did.
You write in the book that while the Astor money was gone, the, quote, undisciplined orphan spirit still abounds. Do you still feel that spirit there?
Yes. What I mean by that is sort of a lack of restraint and inability to follow rules out of the outside society. I grew up around people who really followed their own rules and their own moral codes, and everyone had their own conflicting rules. So there was a tremendous amount of conflict among the joint owners. So I felt, growing up, I felt a lot of pressure to become capable of working in the outside world and functioning in the outside world. I was told from a young age that I would have to have a job when I grew up because if we all became bohemian and we all were self-employed artists, we'd never hold on to the property. So I prepared for that. I played the violin very seriously. I went to a high school that enabled me to work on my violin seriously. And at the age of 18, I got into the New England Conservatory, and I asked my grandmother to pay for the tuition. And she said, well, you can't go to a trade school. So at that point, I was getting mixed messages all along about, trying to make it in the outside world, and then what did that actually mean? My grandmother came from On her mother's side, she was from the Fish family. Her uncle had been Hamilton Fish III. On her father's side, her father was the senior partner at Smith Barney. So she expected, when she meant live in the outside world, she expected me to get a very prestigious career.
You went back to Rokeby to live in 2005 and were there for about 3 years. You were doing renovations. What was your hope?
Well, when I went back, I believed that I could fix everything up and clean everything and make it, you know, I went back to my old obsessions with making everything presentable to the outside world. I got on my father's backhoe and started pulling scrap metal out of the barnyard and out of the dump and loading it onto his dump truck and bringing it to the scrapyard across the river. So I was really kind of possessed by that need to fix everything. But then I quickly realized that wasn't really possible because my father would just bring in more junk. And so it was an endless, there was no result. So ultimately I decided that if I couldn't really fix Rokeby, I couldn't change it, but I could at least resolve some of the issues I had from my childhood by writing about it. So I focused then on my own feelings and relived those experiences from my childhood by writing.
So what is your relationship with the place now?
Well, I have a room there, as does every family member. It's sort of a hotel for those who don't live there. Well, the relationship may change now that the book is out, but I have a great relationship with my parents. They're very supportive of the book. And basically, I don't plan to return there to live. I really wanted to put my past behind me. I still have a lot of issues with the property and the family. It's a beautiful place. I'm grateful that I had the experience of growing up there. And I still have a place to go on weekends if I need.
The name of the book is The Astor Orphan, a memoir. It is published by Echo. Alexandra Aldrich, I thank you very much for spending time with us.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Again, the title of the book, The Astor Orphan. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.